B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who has both casual and formal golf shoes, Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. Another week of all over the place around here in the world of golf, which means it's one of my more favorite weeks. Colby Calloway is the tournament director of the Houston Open, the much maligned yet much on the rebound Houston Open with a long and storied history on the PGA Tour. We had the chance to catch up with him during his busy week. Ron Mintz is a freelance golf journalist and will get us all caught up on where we are on tour and remembering a fallen golf icon from 20 years ago. But we begin today with Aaron Thorne. This marks Aaron's sixth year as the head women's golf coach at Wingate. And in that time, she's quietly gone about building a burgeoning D2 power in women's collegiate golf. Coach, before we get into your team and your schedule so far, your results, it's important for me to check on your past. You've been on the show before. We know that you didn't just come from Canada. You came from the Great White North. You described a club to me one time that you worked at or were a member of, I forget, that was a golf and curling club. And literally once, I don't know, August rolled around and the first snow came into Canada, y'all started getting ready for curling. So I need to ask, how are things back home?
I think still pretty good. My parents have moved a little further south than the town I grew up in, but seeing the pictures from when my parents went out west to visit my sister, I'm glad I'm in North Carolina than Saskatoon, where she's now living.
Oh, I can't imagine what your childhood must have been like, just a blanket of white, just constantly. Someone asked me the other day, though, and I said, I don't know. I don't think I ever really asked her. Would you consider, you're a really good golfer. You beat the pants off of us a couple of weeks ago. But would you consider yourself a better curler or a better golfer in your prime?
Oh, gosh, golfer by far.
Oh, okay.
I didn't really actually curl all that much. We did it as part of gym class from time to time. and the only other time that I did it on a regular basis was actually while I was in the process of considering applying for the head pro job to replace the boss that I worked for. And the word on the street was it was going to be a combination of curling coordinator and then head golf professional. So my mentor, Mr. Webb, thought that I should maybe at least learn the game, and it was an interesting kind of winter. I quite enjoyed the fact that there were beer mugs at the end of the rink on both ends, so I could partake in that part of it quite well.
It's fantastic. It's why she's one of my favorite coaches anywhere. Aaron Thorne is the women's head coach at Wingate. She's our guest taking dead aim. I'm always curious when I look at the makeup of your team, and I want to spend some time talking about this because we talked about it a little bit on the course a couple of weeks ago. I look at things and I see, you know, Murphy, Texas, and Thomasville, North Carolina, and Allentown, PA, and Clearwater, Florida. And then, you know, you throw in a couple of Ontarios in there because I guess it's a prerequisite. You have to have Ontario people in there. But then we get some crazy stuff, as always, with your group. We have people from Thailand, and I know that Marissa's been with you for a while now. We have someone from Germany now. My question to you is twofold, and we've already talked about this off the air, but I wanted to get it on the air. How do these ladies from, you know, far away as Thailand and Germany, how do they get on your radar? Who gets them on your radar?
There's a bunch of companies out there that help connect coaches and potential student athletes. So really just through a bunch of networking through companies that make that connection for you.
Now, is this something that the girls in that country initiate, or do their – see, I don't know if, you know, the golf is more of a state-run thing in some of these countries, and you know, the country actually helps hook up girls with these services, or how does that relationship get established?
I think it just depends on the person. I know that these companies, they go out and essentially do their own recruiting. You know, the girls have to pay a fee of some sort for the services that are provided to make that connection with coaches and that sort of thing. So I think a lot of it is the companies go out and tell them the services that they can provide for the student athlete and that sort of thing. And then they, as, you know, as a person or a family, whatever that decision-making process is, say, yeah, we're going to go or do it on our own. Or, you know, there's some that I'm sure are fortunate enough that their federation, you know, connect them and pay for it and that sort of thing.
Aaron, part of your job is to be a surrogate parent for these girls while they are with you. The relationship between college golfers and their coach, I've talked about it many times. It's one of the more intimate that you'll ever find in athletics. It's hard enough to be a freshman when you go to college. For most of us, when we go to college, it's our first time really away from home for an extended period of time. It's our first time where we have to budget our own time. It's our first time having to do our own laundry. There's lots of big boy and big girl things that go into being a freshman at college outside of being an athlete. That's hard enough if you're from Thomasville, North Carolina. I can't imagine the culture shock of being from Thailand or being from Germany. And not only, you know, being a freshman in college, but for crying out loud, you talk about being away from home and all these things. How much more difficult have you found their adjustment to be than, you know, an American golfer's?
I think it's just more the human nature of, you know, you've had 17, 18 years with mom and dad, and so whether you're 2 hours away or, you know, a 2-day flight home, you know, when homesick hits, you're homesick. So, you know, just the fortunate part of your 2-hour drive, you can, you know, if there's a weekend off or even just one day off on the weekend, you can get home and get that hug from mom and dad and that sort of thing. I think for me as a coach, I can just empathize so well because I was such a homebody. And I tell the girls, you know, with as many details as I can remember, you know, more than 10 years removed from my freshman year, my parents were able to make it down to one fall tournament. It was at Notre Dame, and that course has become one of my favorites. We played it all 4 years, and it was just pouring down rain the last day. My parents had only planned to stay for the first 9 because they had to get home to be able to be at their jobs Monday morning and everything like that, and I was not playing well, and the shoulders were going up and down, and the tears were streaming down the face, and I looked at them after a snap hook and a drive on 10 to say, take me home with you, you know, through the tears, and you know, so they stuck around for the next 9 as well, and, you know, coach hung out with me for much longer than, you know, she normally would with any of us. She was very much a stand on the par threes, but, you know, so I can empathize with them so well. And I even tell them now, you know, it doesn't matter even how old you are. You know, when I'm back out of my parents' driveway, you know, from summer, little vacation up there, like, I'm still, you know, tears streaming down my face, you know. So I think if you're a homebody and, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, you get homesick, and it's just a product of caring about your family. So I think just the empathy that I can share with them, even at this point in my life, helps them know that, you know, it's okay, it does go away, and, you know, you'll get to see them again quickly. So
Aaron Thorne is the head women's golf coach at Wingate. She's our guest taking that in. Before we get into the first part of your schedule and your results, one last question that interests me with international players coming to American universities, and that is the disparity, and I don't know if that's quite the word, but the difference in academic standards between countries and colleges and what high school level of academics are in one country as compared to what they are in another. How does all of that get translated? How does all that get put into an even playing field for admissions?
They've got services out there that they can kind of translate the grades, you know, from a percent base or whatever the country deals into the GPA that we have here. I think, you know, it almost works against a lot of our international students because the demands of high schools elsewhere seem to be a little bit higher. Plus, there's no ability to do like the AP courses or anything like that. So, I mean, from an academic aid standpoint, they might be at a disadvantage, but they get into the university and they thrive because that first year is almost a review or at least, you know, half the year is a review of a lot of courses that they've already taken. So they can put themselves in a really good position as they're going through all those adjustments and homesickness and everything that you talked about earlier, that their grades are so good that it just puts them in a really good position moving forward, and then you never have to worry about eligibility with them.
Looking at the makeup of your roster, I see 2 seniors, a junior, and then the rest freshmen and sophomores. This is a really young squad, is it not?
It is. It is. I mean, we've still got a bigger portion of those that have traveled so far this year in that upperclassmen component. So they're really setting the tone for us, and you know they're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. Their career is coming to an end, and there's some big goals that they want to achieve. And so they're relying on those younger ones to really continue to work hard and set the example for those younger ones that here's what you got to do to achieve those goals. So they're doing a good job from a leadership standpoint.
You start off the season with, it's a win. You can't win them all if you don't win the first one. That had to feel good coming out of the gate, like we said, knowing that, okay, you're relatively young in the roster. The more success you can have early, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, for certain. And it was a really special kind of win because it actually came down to our fifth score on that second day. So we were tied with Lenore Ryan, who, you know, over the last couple of years has been our main rival. And you're throwing out that fifth score, but it came down to that fifth score as the tiebreaker. I know I've spent over the last couple of years of, you know, telling everybody, you got to finish out every single round because you never know when we're going to need that fifth round. And it happened that we needed that fifth round, and it was the difference.
Don't you love it when something you've been preaching absolutely comes to fruition and you can just walk into a meeting and say, see, I told you.
Yes, that's always a good feeling.
Erin Thorne is the head women's golf coach at Wingate. She's our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, let's talk about what happened at the Battle of the Old South. Another good-sized field and a third-place finish. Two top fives in your first two outings.
Yeah, so again, we got off to a really good start. We were actually leading after the first day after setting program record for the Team 18 hole total. And it was kind of neat to hear them as, you know, they were handing me scorecards so that I could double check that we got two signatures and everything on it. The word grind came out, I think, of all five of their mouths, and we shot 299. So again, it's just a sign of where the program is, that our quote unquote, you know, tougher days or bad days are sub 300 now, whereas even last year, 2 years ago, we were celebrating that. So we've taken some pretty big steps forward. And I mean, it's one of those ones where you don't feel like you lost. I mean, Lee went out and if memory serves right, they shot two under as a team. So, I mean, we would have had to do something pretty darn special, obviously, that we hadn't done in program history to have won it. So, I mean, I think that, you know, again, it's one of those where if they went and won, I don't think we lost, that title, but again, we still took a lot of good from that tournament.
Erin, what do you attribute that kind of improvement? Are the players, are they better coming out of high school, or are they improving more once they're in college?
Kind of a twofold there for us. So last May's graduating class was the point where it was my first senior class. So from a recruiting standpoint, we're really at that point where it's everybody that I've recruited. And so I go after kids that have that potential to play the mid-major D1s, and I try and put it out there that, yeah, you could have a fabulous experience and play, you know, mid-major D1, that sort of thing, or you can come to a school like Wingate, and we're going to shoot very similar scores. We're going to play a competitive schedule, but we're building towards winning national championship. So, I mean, again, I was that mid-major D1 kid, absolutely loved my experience at Western Michigan, wouldn't trade it for the world, but I didn't have any kind of coach angling, hey, we're building towards a national championship. So we get kids in that are really, really skilled already. Haley, the freshman from Ontario, the last I checked just before she started school, she was ranked inside the top 1,000 in world amateur ranking. So that's kind of where we're at as a program. We're getting really good kids in as freshmen, but then we look at somebody like Madison Gorman, who as a now sophomore went home over the summer, worked her tail off, and, you know, is shooting even par rounds already, whereas, you know, towards the end of last year we were just celebrating putting, you know, sub 80 rounds up in tournaments and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's both. They're working super hard because I'm up front and honest and saying, here's what I'm bringing in. If you want to maintain your travel spot, you better go home and work hard this summer, because otherwise you're going to get passed. So it's a twofold kind of thing there.
You mentioned you've got more than 4 years under your belt now at Wingate. What is the biggest recruiting obstacle that you feel like you've overcome, that when you came in, you're like, man, I wasn't ready for this, but you've since overcome it?
Just, you know, getting our name out there and getting kind of what we're after out there, so that, you know, kids that do have the skill set to go and play those mid-major one, for those schools, that they see it as, hey, if I've got the aspirations to play professionally afterwards, I can go to a school like Wingate. I can learn the skills of winning and, you know, build towards that national championship and compete and everything and still go after my goal of playing professionally. So I think just kind of that stigma of D1 versus D2.
Aaron Thorne is the head women's golf coach at Wingate, our guest taking Dead Aim. Get you out of here on this. You got two tournaments left here in the fall. You're heading to St. Augustine, Florida, and then to Winter Park, Florida. When we talk in January as things get kicked back up, fill in the blank on this sentence. A successful fall for us at Wingate would be blank.
I mean, first it starts in the classroom. We just got midterm grades posted, and we're off to probably the best start in the classroom, which is exciting to pair it with what we've done on the golf course so far. But, you know, the first rankings come out in about a week. So, you know, our big goal, and I've said it to Mr. Poston, our athletic director, and other administration, I think that we're a top 10 program. You know, so I think if we look at where we were ranked at the end of last year is 24th, 25th, I think if we're inside that, like, top 20, top 15 by the end of the fall, we'll be in a good position to really achieve those bigger goals through the spring semester.
All right, next time we play, I get five aside.
You're right.
She's one of my fave people in the game in the area. That's Wingate Women's Head Golf Coach Aaron Thorne. And up next, where are we now on tour? Last week? This week? And remembering an icon taken from us way too soon 20 years ago. Freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz takes Dead Aim at all of it. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, and joined now by freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz.
Ron, let's first talk about Vegas. Look, I'm a huge Patrick Cantlay fan on a lot of levels, but one thing that drives me berserk, and it really drove me berserk playing with Kevin Na, is, oh my God, you can time this guy with a calendar. If there was ever a group that was the poster children for the slow play problem on the PGA Tour, it was the final group on Sunday with Cantlay and Na.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin's still slow, even though he does back off from his driver like eight times on every tee anymore. But he's still one of the slowest players out there.
I can't get over Cantlay standing over the ball. My son got to the point, we were out playing golf and we came back and we were watching the playoff, and my son just started counting out loud once he had addressed the ball and was standing over it. And Ron, it was legitimately 10 to 15 seconds after addressing the ball before he pulled the trigger. I don't know how he keeps the tension out of his body and out of his golf swing standing over it for that long. I can almost see it with putting. I can't see it with the full swing. It's on one hand, it's aggravating. On the other hand, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, you're talking about Na, right?
No, I'm talking about Cantlay.
Cantlay. Oh, well, I didn't really notice him. I guess I was preoccupied with Na. Yeah, I don't know. Cantlay was very impressive. I think he should have won the event last weekend. But Kevin got the best of him in the playoff. But I had picked Cantlay earlier in the week to win, and so I was a little disappointed. But, you know, 23 under par, and he had a playoff. That's pretty impressive.
Well, and I like Cantlay's demeanor an awful lot. One of the FedEx Cup playoff events that Justin Thomas won, Cantlay was right there. And, you know, he just is so cool, like the other side of the pillow. And I just imagine him. I know he's going to be on Tiger's President's Cup team. I think he's a near lock probably to be on next year's Ryder Cup team. And this is the kind of guy that I want on our Ryder Cup team. Just sort of a tenacious bulldog who has overcome so much in his personal life that you just know whatever comes his way in a Ryder Cup match is not going to affect him.
Yeah, he's elevated his game to the point where every week he's among the top contenders or the people that everyone picks to be in contention on Sunday. And he certainly earned it. And as you said, he's went through a lot of personal trials and tragedy. But he's solid as a rock on the golf course. There's no doubt about that.
Freelance golf writer Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim this week. The tour, there's two stops on the PGA Tour that are near and dear to my heart. Of course, the Wells Fargo Championship here at Quail Hollow Club. And as a native Houstonian, the Houston Open. My very first experience going to a PGA Tour event was as a boy when my dad was still a photographer with the Houston Chronicle going to the Shell Houston Open in the Woodlands. And I don't even know what the tournament's called now. It will always be the Shell Houston Open because they seemingly that was the sponsor for 100 million years. I know they're not anymore. And I got very distressed a year or so ago when the Shell sponsorship ended and it looked like, I mean, it really looked like Houston was going to be off the PGA Tour calendar. For the first time in, I don't know, 60 or 70 years, it was some obscene number like that. The owner of the Houston Astros stepped in and saved the day, and I'm really happy about it. I think they expected a little bit better field than they got this year. I don't think they'll have as good a field next year because of the Ryder Cup, even though they're moving to a brand new venue, and you and I will talk about that here in a second. But I think 2 years down the line, with the new venue, with the solid sponsorship, I think the Houston Open could become a really, really good stop in the fall on the PGA Tour. And maybe that's just the Houstonian in me wanting it to be that way. But what do you think?
I agree. I think the problem is, you know, they were on life support, like you said, and Mr. Crane owns the Sonics stepped in with some other business leaders.
The Astros,
I'm sorry. Same thing happened in Greensboro with what used to be the GGO and now it's the Wyndham Championship. The JCs had run that tournament for 50 years, but it just kept getting a weaker field, and they moved it to Forest Oaks, and then they had Davis Love renovate the course, and the pros didn't like it. And it was about to go under, and local businessmen stepped in and saved that, and now it's the Wyndham Championship, and now they've got the top 10 Wyndham rewards, so it's elevated. It's the last event in the season that you can get in the FedEx playoffs, so you can go from being on life support like the Houston Open and the Wyndham to coming back. And the only thing about the Houston Open that's really hurt them is they used to be the last tournament before the Masters, and it was the last chance you had to qualify, and now they're in the fall. But they'll come back, and I think eventually they'll give them a better spot, maybe not in the fall season, maybe back in the regular year. But hats off to those businessmen down there because it is iconic. I mean, it's been around, what, 46 years.
It's just forever. Yeah. I can never remember in my lifetime not having professional golf on the PGA Tour stop in Houston. I just can't.
Yeah, I mean, you look back and all the legends, Arnie, Jack, Byron Nelson, everybody played in that tournament, and there's so much history there. It's one of those tournaments that needs to be saved regardless. And I think, you know, they've said they're going to thrive, and I really believe that.
Well, and you got me to thinking, not only Greensboro, but I can remember when the tournament up in Hartford, when Cannon pulled out its sponsorship, and they were on life support. I can remember Hilton Head not too long ago in the recent past being on life support, and now both of those tournaments are thriving. So like you said, it's not something that hasn't been done before. Freelance writer Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. You can follow him on Twitter. In fact, he's a fantastic follow on Twitter, at Mintz Golf. He's our guest. The course that they're moving to next year makes me smile when I see about it. They're moving to Memorial Park, and for those that have never been to the Houston area, don't know about Memorial Park, it may be the oldest municipal golf course in the city. And when I say municipal, I mean it. It's owned by the city. Literally, it's a golf course in the middle of a concrete jungle. Everybody who has ever picked up a golf club in the city of Houston has played Memorial Park. There you could find groups of men there that have played in the same groups for 30 and 40 years at Memorial Park. And I love to see that the tour and this Astros group and some other people have gotten together, some big civic leaders, and they have done a complete renovation under the auspices of Tom Doak, sort of a renovation and reinvention of Memorial Park. They move there next year. it's going to be not only fun for the pro golfers, but Ron, this may be the only course on the PGA Tour, and if one crosses your mind, let me know. This may be the only course on the PGA Tour that is a true muni, that the other 51 weeks out of the year, not only can anybody play it, but anybody can play it economically. It's cheap.
Yeah, it's like Bethpage Black, although it's difficult to get on, but it's a public course and ranks one of the toughest in the country. It's on everybody's bucket list. And yeah, I love it when the tour goes to municipal golf courses, because that's where I started, and I always have a soft spot in my heart for those courses.
Yeah, one of the things about it that I was talking with the tournament director and the director of media relations is that, whether you like it or not, the pros really love to go to a place that they can go and shoot 22, 23 under par over 4 days. That makes them very happy, especially in the fall when they want to take things a little bit easier anyway. And this is going to be one of those courses that they're going to be able to do it, and they're going to be treated first class. And I think that's something that's going to benefit that event. Maybe not next year, because the schedule's going to bite them because of the Ryder Cup. But 2 years from now, the year after the Ryder Cup, they're going to have a cush spot in the fall. The word of mouth is going to get out about the renovation of Memorial Park. And guys, you can go down there and have your B game and shoot about 18 to 20 under par, make a good check, eat some good Tex-Mex, go to an Astros game, go to a Rockets game, go to a Texans game. You know, I think that word of mouth is going to spread, and they have a chance of having a good field and a really solid event.
Yeah, I agree, and I don't know if you knew this. I just found out that Mr. Crane and the tour had talked about having the Houston Open this year before the U.S. Open, but Crane said it would be too hot in the summer for the event, and so they think eventually the tournament's going to go back to the spring, but they said it won't happen for at least a couple of years, but that's their goal, is to move the tournament to the spring instead of the fall. So, you know, with Mr. Crane's influence in golf and a lot of clubs he belongs to associated with PGA Tour, he's sort of like Johnny Harris. He can make things happen. And like I said before, you said, I think the future is really bright for this tournament.
Freelance golf writer Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. You and I off air had swapped some messages this week when we were discussing this conversation. One of the things that you brought up and I really wanted to talk about, and I will in more detail next week when I have Kevin Robbins on, who's just written a fantastic book about Payne Stewart, is, you know, let's not forget that this is 20 years now. And I, gosh almighty, how did that happen that it was 20 years? But we lost Payne Stewart in that plane crash 20 years ago.
It's one of those things. I remember where I was, Charlie. I was working at my home office that day. I wasn't traveling, and I had the TV on, and it was in the morning, I believe, and all the networks broke in and said that there was a corporate jet with four people on board, maybe five, including the pilot, and they believed PGA Tour player Payne Stewart was one of them, and they had lost contact with the plane. And so this went on for, I guess, a couple of hours, and they would break in, and they sent up fighter jets, the military did, pulled alongside the plane, and they couldn't see anybody. They did see somebody slumped over. And it certainly sounded like exactly what happened, that the cabin lost pressure and no oxygen. So I think it was on an automatic pilot and finally ran out of fuel. But I'll never forget it. It was one of the saddest days in PGA Tour history. And there were two other gentlemen there, and I cannot remember their names. I know one was Payne's manager.
One of them's name was Van. I think one of them's name was Van, and I forget the other, but you're right.
And I think another was a golf architect, and they were going to look at some property, I believe, maybe put Payne's name on it as co-designer or something.
Yeah, but they were going to do a brand new golf course for the SMU golf team. Of course, Payne being an alumnus of Southern Methodist, Payne was going to put his name on it along with this architect, and that's what they were going to stop off in Dallas and do that, and then go on to Houston, where they were holding the tour championship at Champions.
It was just terrible, and I posted that on Twitter a couple of days ago, and I couldn't believe how many people wrote back and said, I can remember where I was the day it happened.
You know,
and that was my case. So it's just, it doesn't seem like 20 years ago. I mean, I read, and I guess you saw this, that his son Aaron, who was 10 at the time, is now 30, and he's going to be a tournament director for the Diamond Resorts tournament on the LPGA Tour. And it's hard, I saw a picture of him, it's hard to believe he's grown up that fast, but, It's been a long time. It didn't seem that long.
Yeah, no, it's and you and I swap messages about this. It's odd how, and maybe it's a defense mechanism of our own to always have us stay young, I guess. I don't know. But it's amazing how we will freeze images in time. And it's sort of like going to a high school reunion. And I had that experience a year ago. The people's faces and who they were are frozen in time in your mind as to who they were at 18. And when you go back 20 and 30 years later, they don't resemble those people anymore, of course. And it's almost shocking to the system because you haven't seen them in that long yet. That's how you remember them. And that's what I was thinking about when we were discussing Aaron being a tournament director. I'm thinking to myself, well, he's 10. How can he be a tournament director on the LPGA? But, I mean, you know, he's beyond grown up. He's grown up out of the house, and he's a man with his own career.
Yeah, I still remember him at the funeral, which was a who's who in golf. I mean, Tiger was there. I mean, everybody was there. Paul Azinger told so many great stories about Payne. One of them about he bought a new boat, and he called Paul and said, listen to this, and he cranked it up, and it was. He said, where are you at? And he said, I'm in my garage. He said, you can't, and it's an inboard motor. It wasn't an outboard. He said, you can't do that, Payne. About that time, it blew up on the telephone and the engine it. Yeah, the engine had blown, and everybody just, you know, it was one of those moments you don't normally see in a funeral, but it was Payne, typical Payne. He was so excited, and he blew up the engine the first time he cranked it. So, yeah, I remember Aaron from the funeral, and, of course, his lovely wife and his daughter. And every time I go to Pinehurst, I see that statue of Payne there with his knickers on, and he just loved life, and you know, we'll always miss him for sure.
Yeah, there's two things. It's funny you bring up the Pinehurst statue because I'm down there so much with my son playing junior golf, and it's always neat. Every single junior golfer that I've ever seen play around at Pinehurst at some point or another goes by and either has their picture made with the statue, touches the statue, or takes a picture with them posing just like the statue. And I think Payne would get such a kick out of that. The two images that are that remain in my mind about Payne Stewart, one was at that tour championship. And I remember the opening day. Of course, it was very somber event, but a bagpiper came out playing Amazing Grace and then walked away into the fog. And he disappeared into the fog. And I always thought that was such a mystical event. It was really, really something. That image never got out of my head. And also, you bring up the funeral, and I don't remember if it was Azinger or maybe it was Payne's coach, but they told a great story about Payne that had just happened right before he died. Payne, of course, won the 1999 U.S. Open here at Pinehurst number 2, memorable over Phil Mickelson. And he was doing some promotional work for the USGA in anticipation of the next U.S. Open, the one that Tiger won at Pebble Beach. And a lot of people may not know that when Payne Stewart was just playing golf recreationally, Payne Stewart looked like you and me. He was wearing shorts and a shirt and a baseball cap, and he had a dip in, and he just looked like a normal guy, or as normal as somebody like Payne Stewart looks. And Payne had played around at Pebble Beach, and he was sitting in at the lodge at Pebble Beach, and there was just him and this other guy at the bar. And the guy said, well, what do you do for a living? And Payne Stewart looked at him as only Payne Stewart could. He says, well, I'm the United States Open golf champion. And the guy looked back at him and basically said, well, the hell you are. And Payne said, no, I'm serious. I am. The guy said, yeah, whatever, whatever. And Payne Stewart said this to him. He says, look, if I can go to the trunk of my car right now and bring in the trophy, will you fill it with whatever I want to drink?
And
the
guy, I know what it was.
And the guy said, yeah, go on. Go out. Go get your trophy. Payne goes out to the car, brings in the Halliburton case, pulls out the U.S. Open trophy. And then there's a pause, and the guy who's telling the story says, Cristal champagne is really expensive. At the lodge at Pebble Beach, it is really, really, really expensive.
It sure is. I remember that like it was yesterday. That's a great story.
That's freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz. And when we return, tournament director Colby Callaway takes dead aim at his Houston Open going on this week on the PGA Tour, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Colby Calloway is in his first year as the tournament director for the much maligned, yet much on the rebound, Houston Open, going on in my hometown this week. Colby, I'm going to be honest with you. There are three golf tournaments I care about more than any other. I spent 5.5 years working in Augusta, Georgia, so I'm a Masters addict. I've spent the last, 14 years here in Charlotte, so of course I love the Wells Fargo Championship and Quail Hollow Club and Johnny Harris and his team to death. But at my heart, I'm a native Houstonian. My very first experience with the PGA Tour was going with my dad when he was a photographer with the Houston Chronicle to go cover the Shell Houston Open when it was held out at the Woodlands. And so this tournament is near and dear to my heart, and it almost got broken when I was starting to read last year that the Houston Open could be going away. How close, honestly, did it come to the PGA Tour not having a stop in Houston for the first time and God knows how long?
First of all, thanks for having me. I truly appreciate being on, but I think it was on death's door. There's no doubt about it. This thing was gone, and Jim Crane decided to come in and save this bad boy, so to speak, and we've got a golf tournament for years to come.
Well, that's fantastic. I noticed that I know that the Astros Foundation is behind it. For those who don't know, Jim Crane is the owner of the Houston Astros, and he's also busy with a little something we like to call the League Championship Series this week. I noticed that the tournament has no sponsor this year. Is that something that is going to remain? Is the Astros Foundation going to put its name on the sponsorship, or are you actively seeking a sponsor for years down the line?
Well, we've created a new model, and the model is based on community leaders, and these community leaders have made up really what is your title sponsor. And so we've got 9 partners locally that make up the Houston Open. It's something that Mr. Crane wanted. It's something that he had this vision for. And the vision is to try to keep that Houston Open logo for our people as long as you can. I mean, obviously, you know, every golf tournament in America pretty much has the corporate stuff splashed all over the place. Our goal is to make this the people's tournament. So trying something new, it's really working well. Sales have just been through the roof. But we've got 9 really, really strong partners here, and we'll probably add a few as the years progress.
I have no idea if one of these names is Jim McInvale, but I'm going to just throw that out there. Is he one of the 9 names?
He's not yet, but I think he's seeing what we're seeing. I have a feeling he's going to be involved in the future.
Yeah, if you don't know who Mattress Mack is, just Google it, boys and girls, and you'll see he's a one of a kind personality there in the Houston area. Colby Calloway is the tournament director with the Houston Open. He's our guest, Taking Dead Aim. What happened with the sponsorship with Shell? I mean, I realize that something's come and go, but my God, it seemed like I really my entire life it was the Shell Houston Open. What happened with that relationship, or do you know?
Yeah, no, you know what? And I don't know a lot. I think it just sort of just came to an end. I think there's a new leadership group that came in and just didn't see golf being a part of their future. And so, you know, they transitioned out of it and they were stuck. And I think that they were stuck trying to figure out who they would put in it, just didn't have any success. And so that's where, you know, Jim Crane stepped in, and that's really why we have a golf tournament.
And on the good note, if you look back historically, I mean, inside the last 10 years, tournaments like Hartford and Greensboro, Hilton Head, New Orleans, they were all at death's door, and now they're thriving as well. So really all it takes is that one charismatic leader to sort of get behind it, and it seems that like things just take off, and it sounds like that's what's happening with you guys. One of the things that I'm very excited about is the move next year. I mean, as much as I'm a fan of just having a tournament this year, and I am, everyone grew up in the city of Houston, and everyone who ever played golf in that city has at one point or another put a bag on their shoulder and played Memorial Park. It's truly a municipal golf course. There's been a significant investment, I believe, to the tune of about $15 million into a I don't even want to call it a renovation. I want to call it a reinvigoration and a rethinking of the Memorial Park track. But it's going to remain a municipal golf course. Colby, to the best of my knowledge, is there such a thing on the PGA Tour as a course where the pros play 1 week out of the year and the rest of the time, not only can the public play it, but the public can play it at an affordable rate? This is going to be an outlier situation, is it not?
Yeah, I think you hit that on the head on the affordable rate. I think obviously Torrey Pines is one, but I'm not sure it's that affordable.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can play Pebble Beach. You've just got to not pay your house for a couple of months.
Yeah, no, and they're keeping the same rate here. Tom Doak came in and partnered with the Astros Golf Foundation and completely privately funded, no taxpayer dollars. And the renovation is going to end up being a little over $30 million when it's all said and done. First tee facility there. Just an absolute facelift of that whole property when it's with really. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. But let me tell you what, they found things there that over the years were lost, you know, and we've got ravines and we've got little bayou systems. They created a flood protection and flood drainage area that will really protect Memorial Park in general. So lots of good things inside the loop. This is Houston's event, and this is for Houstonians, and they get to now come out and play a world-class golf course for $45.
Yeah, and y'all, when I say municipal golf course, literally you could hit a sand wedge over a stretch of trees and hit Interstate 10. It is right there, just off the freeway, Memorial Park. It is truly a municipal course. Colby Calloway is the tournament director of the Houston Open. He's our guest taking that in. What was the process of hiring Tom Doak? Were there other designers considered? How did that process go about?
Yeah, there were. Giles Kibbe, who's president of the Astros Golf Foundation, was really tasked to that. I think there were three guys they looked at, three design teams. And I think Tom's vision, Tom, it was funny, Tom said he really didn't ever have any desire to do a course that built for a tournament. And this was something that maybe he wanted to do and take a shot at. And he also came in and said, you know what, guys, the bones are there. We don't have to do anything crazy, but let's go this route, let's go that route. Giles just fell in love with the idea and approached Mr. Crane and said, you know, these are the three. This is the one I think is the best. Jim totally agreed, and there you go. Great. I'm telling you, I played it one time, I played it one time right before they closed, and then I walked it 12 more times before they started doing it just to get my feel of it. It is going to be spectacular. It is going to be electric next year, and we are so excited to have a new home for this event.
Tournament consultant, I think that's the title, is the number one player of the world, Brooks Koepka. What has been his involvement in this design with Mr. Doak?
Yeah, he's been working with Tom quite a bit. He's been in a few times. It's really, it's exactly what he said with the player consultant thing. Talking to Tom about what the players like, what they don't like, what bothers them and what doesn't bother them. You know, one thing that'll be unique that you'll see and notice next year, there aren't a lot of bunkers. There's just not a lot of bunkers out on the golf course. There's very few. Tour players don't get bothered by bunkers. If they're in the right spot, they do, but it's a lot of undulations, a lot of elevation changes on the, on the fairways and such. Nothing crazy, but just enough to kind of make you a little uneasy as you're approaching that shot. And that's where Brooks came in. He just gave him the ideas of what the players like and don't like, and Tom ran with it.
Colby, you've mentioned that the support from the city of Houston in terms of the populace, the people, has been overwhelming. I would just guess, seeing as how my father is an old cantankerous taxpayer in the city of Houston, and he's probably tired of funding stadiums. In fact, I can tell you he's tired. He is. The fact that all of this money was private and did not come from the taxpayers, did that sort of reinvigorate the people's support of this tournament in that, it was sort of, for lack of a better term, it was a Texan thing to do. We don't need anybody else's money. We don't need anybody else's help. We're going to do this, and our people are going to get behind us.
Yeah, I do. I think that people are still learning that. I think there's this kind of shock and awe that it didn't get publicly funded. You know, everything does get shoved down our throats these days, whether we like it or not as taxpayers. And this is one of those things that, again, Mr. Crane developed the Astros Golf Foundation specifically for this. And we've been able and tasked to go out and find donors and partners in this project that want to be a part of something special for Houston. And so the message is still out. I think next year it's really going to catch on, and they're going to realize, holy cow, look at what we've done. Look at what they've done for us, and it's not on our dime for a change. So lots of positive stories that are going to come out for this, but still the message is still, we're still learning that as Houstonians, to be quite honest, but it's going to be very clear as we enter 2020 how this all took place.
See, my vision is this. I think next year is going to be better than this year, and there's going to be excitement because of the new venue. I think, and this is just me being skeptical, that because of the fact that we've got a Ryder Cup year next year, that your spot on the schedule is still going to hurt you just a little bit, but I think the word of mouth after year two about the course, about the support you get from the people and all the great things, I'm sure the tournament is going to take care of the players as they always have. I think that'll really, really enable you to perhaps get a much better field in terms of quality of player, in terms of world ranking in year three. Is that something, as far as staying in the fall, do you look to try to carve out a niche for yourself, the Houston Open on the fall schedule, or is there thought down the line of, if we prove ourselves to a certain extent to the tour, maybe we can move back to the spring?
Well, I tell you, if you could see what I'm looking at, which is just an enormous build, it's a spring build. I mean, we're a spring tournament. We're just stuck in the wrong spot, and that was what was given to us, and that's what we took. I don't take it anything less than, hey, it is what it is, and we're going to make it as big and as good for our spectators and our patrons as we can. I think we proved it this week. I think the whole thing is that, you know, if we're in the fall or in the spring, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to put the best product we possibly can out there. If the tour finds a spot for us in the spring, great, we'll take it. If they continue to put us in the fall, I can promise you this, we're gonna grasp it with open arms, and we're going to make it awesome. When it comes to the players, I'll be honest, I just am thrilled that the 144 that we have here this week are here, and I'm going to be thrilled with the 144 we get next year are here. Honestly, that stuff, I do not lose sleep over anymore. They either come or they don't. We're going to have the same party regardless of who's here.
You know, there's lots of Texans out on the PGA Tour and lots of Texans on the Champions Tour and in the World Golf Hall of Fame. Is there thought from the Astros Golf Foundation about, you know, in addition to having Koepka's name on the redesign, sort of corralling in some of these Texas guys and saying, hey, why don't you come to bat for one from the home team?
You know, I think there's a little bit of thought process going on. I think that we went through this year in particular, and just we're really, it's a bridge year. We're, you know, A, we saved the event from extinction. B, we wanted to build this thing up to showcase what we're about to be, which is a big time event on any time of the year. It doesn't matter if it's spring or fall. We go toe to toe with anybody build wise right now. So as we move forward, I'm sure you'll see a face or two that we've all recognized in the game of golf that'll step up and get behind us and start to message and help us, you know, get the word out that the Houston Open is back and better than ever.
I wish that guy the best of luck, but I don't think he's going to need it very much. That's Houston Open Tournament Director Colby Calloway. I'd also like to thank freelance golf journalist Ron Mintz and Wingate Women's Head Coach Aaron Thorne for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered today, absolutely no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there right now, links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game and weather-wise. Well, fall weather and its temperatures have arrived with plenty of opportunity for teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart this weekend. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.